I wasn't expecting quite so many. If you hear anything knocking, it's only my knees. But I am a little bit nervous because last time I stood up here for the last Sabbath of the year was in 2019. And I spoke about gaining 2020 vision. I didn't realise that we were going to have 2 years of lockdown from that point onwards, basically. So I hope that by me speaking today, we don't experience something similar next year. That's for sure. I also noticed something interesting today. If it wasn't mother and daughter taking part up the front, it was father and son. It was mother and daughter-in-law. And now it's husband and wife. Or wife and husband, I should say, to get it technically correct. Plus we've got the father of the daughter upstairs as well doing the audio visuals. And thank you for that, Alan. I want to talk about food today. I think it's a pretty relevant subject considering that we've probably eaten pretty well over the last week or so. I also notice, and Luke, thank you for that, those Mentos that keep popping up in the jar out the front. I've become quite a favourite in sticking my hand in that jar and getting them, so thank you for that. But food is an interesting subject. I don't have any potential for growing any taller, but I certainly have plenty of potential for growing wider. And food helps me do that fairly regularly. And so I have to behave myself a little bit now in that front. But in talking about food today, I will use the disclaimer that I'm not a dietitian. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not an activist talking about the different types of pesticides that may or may not be used on food. But I do want to share some interesting facts with you about the wastage of food, just to start off with. And this is these are from some reports that I've gleaned from the Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water. Sorry, that's one department, all right? The Department of Climate Change, Energy, the Environment and Water. And from another source called the Australian Institute, which is a research group. And I'd like you just to have a look at this for a moment. Actually, you will see all the good foods that I ate on Christmas Day. If only that was true. I won't show you the foods that I did eat on Christmas Day, apart from the fact you can probably see it around my waist. But have a look at this. This is another thing about food too, before we actually get on to the other part, and that is that the interesting things about eating food is that it's not about the consumption of food, but it's the fact that we actually bond over meals. We have a church lunch every month, don't we? We invite people along. We have birthdays. We have Christmas. We have other celebrations, like just this last week or a week and a half, our son celebrated his graduation from Swinburne University. And so we went out and had dinner that night. And there's other events such as weddings as well. And whether we like it or not, we actually do put on food for when we have funerals as well. But at this point that I like, the third point down, by eating together it means that we actually share a common interest. So it's surprising how we can come from completely different backgrounds, but at the moment that we get to the table and we start eating, we've got that shared interest straight away, isn't it? But let's have a look at this. This is the Department of Climate Change, and sorry that the writing's a little bit small here, but I'll pick out some highlights for you. This report was produced in 2021. $36.6 billion each year is what the food waste cost is to the Australian economy. Each Australian wastes around 7.6 million tonnes of food, which equals to about 312 kilograms per person. And it costs up to about $2,500 per household per year. Australia uses around 2,600 gigalitres of water to grow food that is wasted. That's five times the amount of water that we find in Sydney Harbour. That's a significant amount of wasted water. The amount of land used to grow food wasted in Australia covers more than 25 million hectares, and the landmass is larger than the state of Victoria. Not only that, our households generate more food waste in Australia, and it equates to about 2.5 million tonnes per year just from our households. But the Australian Institute says this: based on industry average profit margins, food retailers make around about $1.2 billion profit from food waste. You're probably like me asking the question, how's that come about? It says that between, research varies a lot on this, but between 10 and 63% of food waste is related to labelling. All right, around about 10% of food waste is related to the cosmetic standards that retailers, such as Coles and Woolies, place on the primary producers to make sure the carrots look just right, the apples look just right, the lettuces look just right. But Coles and Woolies, between the two of them, only account for about 70% of packaged grocery sales and 50% of fresh produce sales in Australia. That's a fairly significant amount. But this is a real interesting one. Who's looked at the use by and best before dates on products? All right, this is called planned obsolescence. You got to use by because it becomes unsafe to eat if you haven't used it by a particular date. Okay? Best before means this, that there may be a loss of quality from the product after a certain date. But you know, on research that was conducted only this last year by the Australian Institute, they found that in a survey sample, 51% of the respondents only were able to correctly identify the difference between a use-by date and a best-before date. Interesting stats. But then, of course, we introduced some other forms of food as well. Do you recognise any of these brands? Kentucky Fried Chicken, first introduced into Australia in 1968 in Sydney. Pizza Hut, also in Sydney in 1970. Hungry Jack's was in Perth in 1971. McDonald's was in Sydney, and in fact today is McDonald's 52nd birthday for introducing Big Macs into Australia. 30th of December, 1971. Red Rooster came to Perth in 1972. And in fact, it was introduced, believe it or not, by fishermen, the Kalis brothers. Then, of course, Domino's came in later on in 83. Subway was in 88. Nando's was in 1990. So they are the youngsters in the trade. And Taco Bell didn't turn up until 2019. But these are all brands we recognise, aren't they? What's the brand down in the left-hand bottom corner? Oh, I didn't think you'd pick up on that one. Starbucks arrived for the Olympics in Sydney in 2000. All right? Now, I don't know about you, but I don't ever recall prior to 2000 saying, oh, let's go out and have a coffee. Let's go out and have a coffee. But hasn't it become the trend now? Every opportunity, oh, we've got to go out and have a coffee. Well, I don't mind drinking a cup of coffee every now and then, but I prefer tea. But I'm going to give you some facts now from the Bible. Food's mentioned in the Bible only 1,200 times, or just over. All right? Grains appear significantly throughout the Bible, along with fruit and fish. The Bible also mentions salt more than 40 times. It mentions honey more than 60 times. And it mentions olive oil more than 140 times. All condiments that we use on our foods, are they not? Who doesn't have honey on their Weet-Bix? Okay, some don't. All right, that's fair enough too. And in fact, the thing that we know about food in the Bible is, and this was described probably in the story of Ruth when she was meeting Boaz, was the fact that in the morning, everyone generally would have a quick meal just to sort of keep themselves going for the day, but it was in the evening that they would relax and that they would sit down and have a proper meal. And generally only had two meals a day, not three like we have. But let's have a look at some Bible texts that refer to food. First text comes in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 9. The Lord made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, and trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. And in the middle of the garden was the tree of life and the tree of knowledge and good and evil. In Genesis 3:6, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. How often do we go into a pastry shop and see some good food, but is it good for us? Things can look pleasing to the eye, but they may not necessarily be as good for us as they could be. The psalmist writes this in Psalm 104. You cause grass to grow for the livestock and plants for people to use. You allow them to produce food from the earth, wine to make them glad, olive oil to soothe their skin, and bread to give them strength. And Psalm 136, he gives food to every creature. His love endures forever. Then we go to Matthew, and Jesus says this. He says, it is written, man shall not what? Live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. In John 6:35, Jesus answered a question here saying, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never hunger, and whoever believes in me will never thirst. In 2 Corinthians, Paul writes this, for God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and then bread to eat. In the same way, he will provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. I wonder what type of food Paul was referring to there in Corinthians. But I want to take us back to the Bible now and just quickly have a quick look at manna, found in Exodus 16. What did we know about manna? The Israelites ate manna for how long? 40 years, the whole time that they were wandering around in the desert. Manna was provided to them fresh every day, except for when? For the Sabbath. So what was the deal with it? Every morning they could go out and they could collect an omer, it is said in Exodus 16, all right? An omer for each person. Now, an omer was equivalent to, and it depending again on where you look this up, but somewhere between 2.3 and 3.6 litres. So a significant amount of food, and that would be enough for one person for the entire day. And so regardless of the size of the family, Liz, whether you had 30 people around for Christmas lunch, you could pick up 30 omers. Okay? For those of us who had a few less for lunch, we could pick up whatever the number of omers were for those people each day. But what did we know about the manna that was picked up each day during the week? If we kept some for the next day, it had gone off, it was rotten, it smelt, and it probably had worms in it. But there was a difference between picking up manna on any given day except Friday. What was the difference with Friday? You could pick up double the amount, yes. Did it go off overnight? No. What was the purpose of that? Okay, you weren't to pick it up on Sabbath. However, some of the Israelites, we were told, still went out on Sabbath morning to go and look for manna, and there was none there. But there were two things that came out of this. Number one, God was testing the Israelites to see if they could actually keep the whole of the Ten Commandments. The second part also was the fact that God was testing their faith and trust in him that he would provide for their needs each day in accordance with the Ten Commandments as well. Here's another story. The widow of Zarephath, 1 Kings. Let's have a look at 1 Kings for this one. It's a short one, 1 Kings chapter 17 and verses 7 through to 16. And it starts off like this, and I'm reading from the NIV. And this is where Elijah had been staying out near the brook Cherith. And Elijah had been fed by ravens. Remember, the ravens brought bread and meat for Elijah to eat, and he drank water from the brook of Cherith. Except now, the brook had dried up, a drought had taken place in the land. And so we pick it up in verse 7 where it says, sometime later the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, Elijah, go at once to Zarephath of Sidon and stay there, and I have commanded a widow in that place to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath, where he came to the town gate, and a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink? And as she was going to get it, he called, and bring me, please, a piece of bread. As surely as the Lord your God lives, she replied, I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. And I am gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, and that way, and that we may eat it and die. Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said, but first make a small cake of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me, and then make something for yourself and your son. Verse 14, for this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, the jar of flour will not be used up and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord gives rain on the land. And she went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and for her family. For the jug of flour was not used up and the jug of oil did not run dry in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. The widow had faith. She had faith to believe that what Elijah said was true and that it was words from God, and therefore she had faith in God and trusted Elijah in that respect. But what about the feeding of the 5,000? This is the only miracle that's actually recorded in all four Gospels of the Bible. So what's the significance of it? Jesus had been walking along, noticed a people gathering, and we're told that they're actually gathering near a Jewish Passover feast. But there's a couple of things that we know about this story. Number one is that the little boy that had that small amount of food that Andrew identified had five little barley loaves and some fish. Now, barley was much less expensive than wheat. And in fact, it was thought of as cheap bread for the poor only. And in fact, some have described it as inferior food for irrational animals and men in unhappy circumstances. They were the only ones that would eat barley. You're either poor or you're in an unhappy circumstance. And in fact, the Jewish commentary that I read this last week suggested that lentils are good for humans and barley for animals. Not very complimentary. But we do know that the feeding of the 5,000 wasn't actually just 5,000 people, because they only counted the men in those days. So we can anticipate that there was possibly in excess of 10,000 people that Jesus fed on that day from five loaves and two small fish. But what else do we know about this feeding of the 5,000? Jesus instructed the disciples to do what afterwards? To actually go around and collect all the fragments that were left over. How many baskets were collected? 12. Interesting. Let's have a look at another miracle that took place, which was the feeding of the 4,000. Now, this isn't recorded in all four Gospels like the feeding of the 5,000 was, but it was similar. 4,000 men, possibly in excess of 8,000 people in total. How many baskets were collected afterwards from the feeding of the 4,000? There were seven. So what's the significance of the collection of the baskets of food that was left over? Firstly, with the 5,000, the 12 baskets left over actually represented the 12 tribes of Israel. And you heard me mention earlier on that it was near a Jewish Passover feast, which meant that where Jesus fed the 5,000 people was in Jewish territory. But where Jesus fed the 4,000 people, it was actually in the Tyre and Sidon region, which was in Gentile territory. And what's the significance of seven baskets left over? Well, the seven baskets actually represented the seven tribes that were in existence in Canaan when the Israelites went into the Promised Land. So we had the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hevites, and the Jebusites. But why did Jesus ask the disciples in both instances to collect the leftovers? In the Bible commentary in page 619, it states this: none of God's blessings are to be wasted. And that was purely the point. While the people were there, while the people were sitting with Jesus, they could eat as much as they wanted from the baskets of food that was there. But Jesus didn't want any of that food to be wasted. He didn't want any of that blessing to be wasted whatsoever. And hence the reason he asked the disciples to actually pick up the fragments that were left over that hadn't been eaten. It wasn't like people would say, oh yeah, I'll have as much as I want, and they just leave it on the ground and said, I'll come back for that later. That's not how Jesus dishes out blessings to us, is it? I want to have a look at one last one. This is Peter. When he's about to talk to Cornelius about Jesus. And this is found in Acts chapter 10. I'm not going to read the whole lot of it to you, but I am going to pick out a few little bits here. And I'm going to pick it up from verse 9, where it says, about noon on the following day, as they were on their journey and approaching the city, Peter went up on the roof to pray. He became hungry and wanted something to eat, and while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven opened and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals as well as reptiles of the earth and birds of the air. And then a voice told him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. Surely not, Lord, Peter replied. I have never eaten anything impure or unclean. And the voice spoke to him a second time, do not call anything impure that God has made clean. This happened three times, and immediately the sheet was taken back to heaven. Then in verse 7 it says, while Peter was wondering about the meaning of the vision, the men sent by Cornelius found out where Simon's house was and stopped at the gate, and they called out asking if Simon, who was known as Peter, was staying there. And as the story goes on, we know that Peter then goes to Cornelius' house, and the whole of Cornelius' household was converted to Christianity. Peter was emphatic, though, that he was not going to kill and eat. Why was that? Because Peter, being a Jew, had lived by the rules of the clean and the unclean meats all of his life. But what he hadn't learned was the distinction between Jew and Gentile, and the fact that that was done away with in Christ. Paul speaks in Galatians chapter 3 that neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, nor social status have any bearing in God's sight. There is no discrimination. We're all one in Christ. So in Peter's instance, it wasn't about what he was to eat or not eat, but it was about him understanding the difference, that there was no difference between Jew and Gentile when it came to Christ. In John chapter 21, we read the story about Jesus meeting the disciples after his resurrection. All right, this is the third time that Jesus has appeared to the disciples. Disciples had been out all night. They were disappointed about life in general, but they were particularly disappointed because they'd been fishing all night and caught nothing. They did see someone standing on the bank, but they actually didn't recognise Jesus at that stage. It wasn't until they came closer that Jesus called out to them and asked them if they'd caught anything. But when the disciples got to the bank, Jesus already had a meal prepared. He already had fish cooking over the coals. He already had some small loaves of bread that had been baked as well. But the disciples didn't ask Jesus where the food had come from. They were just happy to see him again and to sit down and eat with him. So I want to ask you this question. What will we do with our food? Will we have faith to believe that God will provide all that we need? Will we keep it simple? Will we savour every moment of it? I'm getting into a little bit of trouble from my wife on this point. She thinks I eat a little bit too quickly. She says, you actually have to savour your food. I said, yes, I'm savouring it in my own special way. Yeah. But I think it is important for us to meet together and share a meal, isn't it? To share with those in need, like we do with the food pantry. To share our blessings with others. The thing about receiving blessings from God is this. There is no use by date. There's no best before date. But we're not to waste our blessings either. It's important that we share our blessings. And the interesting part about the disciples, and this is another part about Jesus asking them to distribute the food in the first place for the 5,000 and the 4,000 crowds, was that they had to actually receive the blessing first from Jesus before they could pass it on to someone else. And isn't that the same with us? That we receive the blessing first, so then God can use us to pass it on to someone else. Are we going to be like the widow of Zarephath that just believes God's word for what it actually is? She gave everything. She knew full well that what she had left was enough just for her and her son, and that was going to be the last meal that they were ever going to have before they died. But God changed that for them. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him, God the Father has placed his seal of approval. Christ's appearance to the disciples after the resurrection was over a meal. He invites us to eat with him just like he ate with the disciples. And the message from God is simple. When we eat what is right and good for us, This will not only impact our physical body, but also our mental, our emotional, our psychological, and our spiritual well-being. So what are we going to eat? Where are we going to eat? And who are we going to eat with in 2024? Will it be on our own or with Jesus? Happy New Year. As everyone comes up now, we're going to sing The Table.